52 Trainers, episode 40.
It's crazy to see. Oh, it's going up here. If I bought, I would make money. Oh, look, it's now going down. And it's going down pretty strongly. If I sell here, I'll make money. I don't need indicators. I don't need a course. I don't need anybody. You know, a 10-year-old kid can see that.
What's up, traders? Welcome to another weekly installment of the 52 Traders podcast. And today we're lucky enough to have Al Brooks on the show. Now, Al is a doctor come professional trader, author and lecturer, and he's been a professional trader since leaving the medical profession 26 years ago. Also a technical analyst contributor to Futures Magazine, where they coined him the Trader's Trader. Al provides live market commentary and daily analysis updates at brooksprice-action.com. Welcome, Al, and thanks for joining me here on the 52 Traders podcast this week.
I appreciate having the opportunity to speak with your group. Thank you very much.
Okay, Al, so I've mentioned some of your highlights already, and I know that's only a small part of your story. So can you tell the listeners a little bit more about you personally and what first attracted you to trading?
Well, I grew up poor, and my mother wanted to have a doctor in the family, so she picked me to be the doctor. And all the time that I was at the University of Chicago, becoming a doctor, becoming an eye surgeon, I wondered if I should be downtown at the Merck or the Board of Trading, and I just didn't have the courage to make the switch. You know, I knew staying as a physician was a sure way to make a lot of money, and I had no idea whether or not I could make money as a trader on the floor of the futures or options pits, and so I stuck with being a surgeon, and I worked extremely hard to save up a lot of money. And in 1988, I had a daughter. And 15 months later, I had identical twin daughters. So I had three daughters under the age of 15 months. And I thought, okay, I saved up a lot of money. I'm going to stay home and raise the girls. And while doing that, I will also trade more. I started trading in 87, the month before the crash. And back then, they did not have E-minis. They had full-size contracts. The day of the crash, I had a big surgery schedule. I had to be in the office, I forget what time, 8 o'clock or 8:30 or something like that. And on the day of the crash, I shorted 13 E-mini contracts. Excuse me, 13 S&P contracts, which today would be the equivalent of five times that. So, you know, 65 contracts or something. And I had to close out before I went to work. You know, the market started going, it went up actually on the morning of the 1987 crash initially. And I ended up closing out the position. I think I lost $5,000. And then as I was driving into work on the radio, I could hear the reports that the stock market's going down. Nobody knows how far down it's going, but it's just going down. And the drop is far beyond what the computers are able to follow. And at the end of the day, had I held on to my 13 S&P contracts, I would have made $400,000 on the day.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, which is crazy. And that day I decided that, you know, that there's pretty good upside to being a full-time trader. And well, a couple of years later when my girls were born, I decided to go ahead, stay home, sell my medical practice, stay home, and become a full-time trader, which I did. And when you start out, everyone who starts out, unless you're at Goldman Sachs or at some major bank and they put you in some kind of training program, you have to kind of figure it out yourself. And back then in the 80s, the internet, well, there was not much on the internet, but when you subscribe to magazines, the ads looked very attractive and appealing. You know, I want to help you use my software, take my training course. And, you know, I took courses, had tutors. I bought all kinds of software that was guaranteed to make me rich, and I spent a lot of money on all kinds of help. And either the people were simply incompetent, which most of them were, or they were dishonest. You know, I know at least two or three of the software companies were ultimately charged with fraud. So there was no really good source of information. Back, I learned in medical school that, you know, the best way to learn something is to just study it, study it, study it from someone who's doing it really well. And I assume that all these books, I read everything, all these books, all these articles, all these websites, you know, all these people were there to help me. And I was losing money, and I kept losing money, and I lost money for about 10 years. So I decided that because I'm losing it, somebody's making my money. So there is an ability to make money out there, but I simply did not have it. And my doctor's approach to learning was a failure. You know, trying to copy what other people are doing, you know, reading, studying, it's all garbage. And ultimately, I concluded that these people, some of them are honest but don't know how to do it. A lot of them are dishonest, and they don't care that they don't know how to do it. So I decided to strip away everything. Back then, there was a big push. I mean, it was just assumed that if you're going to trade, you have to use all kinds of indicators, you know, bands and oscillators and, you know, GAN lines. GAN lines were actually popular back then. Nobody uses them anymore because, you know, they're a fraud. So my computer screens, I had multiple monitors. I had, you know, all kinds of indicators all over my screens. And, you know, eventually I started to write my own indicators. And I started to realize that indicators are just another variation of a price chart. You know, you're weighting different factors, but anything that you see on an indicator, you can see on a price chart. So I started to remove all of my indicators, and I left myself with simply a price chart. No moving averages, no nothing on it. I've tried every kind of time frame, you know, tick charts, volume charts, 1 minute charts, 60 minute charts, all kinds of other charts over the years. And I like rhythm. I like predictable rhythm. And time charts give me that. I know that the bar is going to close in 5 seconds, in 10 seconds, in 1 second. I like that, whereas you don't know that with volume charts or tick charts. Also, the trend lines on time charts are extremely reliable. A lot of computers use them. I mean, they clearly use them because they're very, very reliable. So I settled on using a time chart. And I've tried using smaller time frames, like 1 minute charts and 2 minute charts. I was making too many mistakes. And then if you use higher time frames, you know, 15 minute charts, 60 minute charts, it doesn't really make sense to sit in front of the computer all day and do that. I like sitting in front of the computer. I like watching every tick during the day. And ultimately, I settled on a 5 minute chart. And after years of using 5 minute charts, I can see an incredible amount of things going on a five-minute chart. On a typical five-minute chart, let's say for the E-mini, which is the popular stock index future contract that Americans trade, and session opens 6:30 California time, 1 o'clock, or 1:15 California time. So you've got 81 five-minute bars in the day. In a typical day, 81 bars, I see on an average day, I probably see 40 one-point scalps and 20 two-point scalps. And I probably see 60 or 70 setups on a typical 81-bar chart. I don't take all of them. On an average day, I might take 10, 20, or 30 trades. But I see an incredible number of setups. So on 81 bars, you know, I see at least one setup on every one or two bars. So I don't need indicators, and I also don't need a 15-minute chart. I also don't need a Globex chart. I also don't need charts of anything else, because on that one chart, I'm seeing 40 or 50 trades a day out of 81 bars. So I don't need anything else, and that's what I do. Now I just sit down, and I try to structure as many good trades as I can a day on my 81 bars, and on a good day, you know, I don't lose anything. You know, I might win 100% of the trades. You know, there's an organization called the NFA, National Futures Organization, and so I have to be careful about what I say I personally do, because I don't want to be audited by the NFA. Al, you said X. You know, we want to look at all your trades for the past 2 years. You know, give us records of all your trades. You know, I'm 64 years old. And I don't want to be audited by anybody. So let me speak in generalities. I know several traders, probably many traders, who win about 90% of the time as day traders. and they win just about every day, if not every day. I've never had a year in which I've won every day of the year. You know, I always mess up some way at some point during the year. My goal in life, I don't know if I'll live long enough to achieve that goal, is to win every day of the year. But, you know, invariably there's some day which has a couple fake-out moves early and I lose. And then the day enters a very quiet training range, or I'll have a doctor's appointment. Something will happen. So at the end of the day, I've lost money. But I never lose much money.
Cool. Really good story there, Al. Have you got more to it? Because I'm going to ask you some questions that dive a little deeper on some of those things throughout the show.
Go ahead. Why don't you ask me?
Okay. So, the first one I've got is, you mentioned that gun lines, is a fraud. What did you mean by that, and where does that sort of come from? Because that's the first time I've heard that.
Okay. GAN lines are dependent upon your bar compression, how many bars you have on the chart. And there's so many variables that I don't know of anyone who consistently makes money using GAN lines. And, it's just a form of trend line. There are other things out there that are pretty fraudulent. A lot of Fibonacci stuff is fraudulent. Just the basis, the logic behind Fibonacci is nonsense. That there's this magic spiral of numbers that, the entire world operates on. And that's just total nonsense. I can tell you that a 50% retracement is extremely important. A 50% extension, 100% extension, those are extremely important. Coincidentally, they're Fibonacci numbers, but they're not important because they're Fibonacci numbers. I could talk for an hour about the mathematics of why a 50% retracement is important, or why a two-thirds or a 75% retracement is important. It has nothing to do with Fibonacci. It has all to do with risk and reward and probability. So there are all things, a lot of things out there that look like they're the cause of something, where in fact they're just correlated. And Fibonacci numbers if enough people trade Fibonacci's, they would be important. But I really don't think enough people pay attention to 62% and 38%, and then all the minor ones in between. Most traders are just dealing with 50% or approximations. If you look at an E-mini chart, and let's say an average day has 10 points. An average day now is more than 10 points, but an average day has 10 points. And four ticks per point, so an average day has 40 ticks vertically from top to bottom. And if you look at all the reversals during the day and you include higher time frame charts and over the past several days, there are probably 40 Fibonacci levels in the course of a day. So that means just about everything in the day is at a Fibonacci price level. And Fibonacci traders don't worry about things being precise. Let's say the market goes, four ticks beyond a 62% retracement. They'll say, it hit a 62% retracement. So if every Fibonacci line has a band of four ticks above or below it, you're talking about every price on the chart as being a Fibonacci level. To me, it's not helpful at all. Same with, I don't want to talk too much about all of the things out there that are fraudulent, but, for the most part, Fibonacci's are fraudulent. GAN is fraudulent. Most oscillators are fraudulent and useless. So, to me, I'm mainly interested in, is the market going up? Is the market going down? How strongly is it going up? How strongly is it going down? I look at every bar in the chart, and at every instant during the day, I'm asking myself, are there more buyers? Are there more sellers? When the bar closes, I ask myself, above the high of this bar, are there more buyers or are there more sellers? At the low of that bar, what do I think is likely? Are there more buyers or are there more sellers? And if you think about it, if you let's say the market's going sideways, and then above the high of the bar, there are stock entry traders. There'll be bulls buying one tick above the high of the bar. And there'll be bears selling one tick below the low of the bar. The flip side of that is limit order traders taking the other side of the trade. So let's say we have a bar. And we know, and let's say it looks like a buy signal. you know there are bulls buying one tick above the high of that bar. Well, guess what? Half the time, I'm selling with a limit order at the high of that bar, taking the other side of the trade, betting that there are more sellers than buyers above that bar. And the same is true below the bar. There are always going to be traders saying, oh, if it goes one tick below this bar, it's going down. So there'll always be stop order traders selling one tick below the low of the current bar. Well, half the time, approximately, maybe more, I'm placing a limit order to buy the low of the current bar, betting that most breakouts fail, most stop orders in general. It's the way traders should trade. Most traders starting out should trade with stops, but most of the bars on the chart, a stop order is a losing strategy. Most of the bars on the chart are in a fairly narrow range, and buying above, selling below, a losing strategy. And so for most of the bars on the chart, I am doing the opposite. I'm looking to sell above bars. I'm looking to buy below bars. If the market's in a trend, that's another story. You know, I am looking for stop entry trades as well as limit order trades. If the market's in a trading range and it's reversing up from the bottom, I will take a stop entry trade. But during most of the bars on the chart, a trader stands to make more money using entering with limit orders and using wide stops, wide protective stops, and scaling in and trading small.
So, what you're talking about, I mean, that sounds a little bit like looking at order flow, but I'm guessing you don't look at order flow, or do you?
Yeah, I do not. I have a friend who runs one of my websites, the Brooks Trading Course website, who a year or two ago tried to sell me on depth of market trading and order flows and all that. And I told him that I don't need to look at a depth of market or order flows. I can see, I know where the orders are. You know, he's telling me about iceberg orders. You know, I know where the iceberg orders are. I can look at a chart and I know that at a certain, I know where the support, I can see all kinds of support and resistance during the day. And I know that there are huge orders at all of those prices. I know, I see them. I don't need that stuff to, if you can read a chart, you know all this stuff. You know, if you can read a chart, you don't need indicators to tell that the chart's about to reverse or a trend is about to resume. You can see on the chart, you know, what traders are doing. On the E-mini, every tick is important. You know, sometimes I hear somebody say, oh, it's just noise. That's total nonsense. Anytime I hear a person says, oh, the market's, it's just noise. Anytime I hear that, I think either the person is ignorant and they just haven't taken the time to understand what the market is doing, or they're either lazy or ignorant. Everything matters. The computer, like the E-mini right now, probably 70% or more of the trades are conducted by computers. And those computers are operating based upon logic, algorithms, and on ideas that have been tested. And that's not noise. You know, it's all logic. So, you know, I think it's better to take the other side of that argument and say there is no such thing as noise. Everything that happens, happens for a reason. These computers are not randomly spitting out trades. Every one of those trades by every one of those computers, by every one of those firms is being done for a logical reason. So nothing is noise. Everything makes sense. And usually if you study charts and you understand what every little bar is doing, every little tick is doing, every little piece of support and resistance is doing, you know where the orders are, and it doesn't take long for you to see, you know, what they're doing. Are the orders buy orders? Or are they sell orders? So no, I pay attention to order flow.
You know, So, would you say you're more of a discretionary trader, or are you using mechanical rules to pick your entries and exits?
I'm entirely discretionary. You know, but, you know, I do things. I have a bunch of, I've accumulated a lot of knowledge over the years. Also, back in the 90s, I spent probably 10,000 hours computer testing just about every idea I could think of. And I also designed a lot of automated strategies. And I traded a lot of automated strategies. And I decided that I'm just too controlling and too obsessive to be an automated trader, because every time I'd see a signal trigger, I'd look at the chart and say, well, you know, I understand that I tested it and it looks like it's profitable, but there are things going on here that there are variables that I did not consider in my system, and I really should consider them. So I kept overriding all of my systems. A lot of what I do, people can automate, and I know, you know, a lot of people have contacted me over the years asking me either to work with them to help them automate or to tell me that they've automated different ideas and they're doing really well with them.
We'll have to talk further because I run a course on teaching people how to automate their trading. Yep. So we'll have to talk further on that. Right, so let's move on with the show. So for those listening for the first time, we're about to enter a round I like to call the fundamentals. And this is where I'll be asking Al to tell us stories that will help you understand what makes him a successful trader. So you've already given us some of these insights, but I'm going to ask you for a few more. So things like, I suppose you've told us your trading style, if you've got a particular strategy you use, which it sounds like you use many, you've told us your time frames, winning percentages, instruments, that's all been said. But what about things like drawdowns? What's your typical sort of drawdown and maybe your risk to reward ratio?
Okay, let me, on drawdowns, I don't get big drawdowns. In general, traders who have been doing this a long time, they have many accounts. They don't trade every account every day. I have many accounts, and I trade many accounts every day for different reasons, and some of them are linked together. And there are other accounts I don't trade. And, you know, in terms of actual dollars, you know, I'm never going to be risking, you know, more than 1 or 2% of my trading accounts on any one trade. So, and I, you know, sometimes I'll get two losers in a row. Rarely I'll get three losers in a row, but I'm never going to be risking all that much.
And in terms of risk to reward ratio, I suppose it's, you know, quite high then. Or
let me just say something about that. I think that's important. And, you know, when I hear traders on television talk about risk reward, it's really deceptive. Because there are actually three variables. Risk and reward implies there's math. You know, how many dollars are you risking? Dollars, that's an amount. How many dollars are you trying to win? That's an amount. That's math. But, you know, risk and reward is meaningless unless you also talk about probability, right? Every trader takes, they're taking either for risk reward or for probability. Nobody can get both. Nobody can get a great risk reward trade that has a high probability of success, right? There always has to be a reason for somebody to take the other side of your trade. So if your trade has a really high risk-reward ratio, the other guy, you have very little chance of winning. You have a very low probability. The person taking the other side has a high probability of winning. In general, shorter time frame traders, scalpers, I mostly scalp, have a very high winning percentage. But we end up taking very bad risk-reward. So in other words, very little reward relative to the risk. But if you win a high enough percentage, you can offset the bad risk. And traders who are looking for really high risk reward trades, you know, really great reward, very little risk, you know, they're going to lose most of the time, right? So if you're risking, let's say you buy something, you buy Apple stock, and you're going to risk one penny, right? You're not going to lose very much. Right, so your risk reward ratio is fantastic. You're risking one penny and you're trying to make $10. Right, so a fantastic risk reward setup on that trade. What's the probability of success? You know, like
very low,
one in a million. Yeah. Right. On the other hand, let's say you have a limit order to take profit on Apple, and you've already made $7 on Apple, and the market gets really close to your limit order. And now your stop is maybe a dollar away. And Apple is now one penny away from your profit target. What are you going to do? Okay. So at that instant, your reward is one penny, right? There's only one penny left to your reward. And at that instant, you're still risking $1. Your stop is a dollar away. Okay. So, at that instant, you're risking 100 pennies to make one penny. So you have a horrible risk-reward setup. Are you going to exit at the market? No, you're not. You're going to hold. So at that instant, you know, you believe your probability of success is really, really high, because otherwise you're crazy. You know, you cannot be risking a dollar to make one penny unless you're very, very confident of making a profit. But the point that I'm making is every trade, whenever I hear somebody talk about risk reward, I think that they're really, I want to be polite. I think they haven't thought enough about what they're doing. You have to consider probability. And sometimes you'll hear that. You know, I watch options action, and sometimes they'll talk about risk reward. And then sometimes someone will actually say, oh, yeah, but you're probably not going to win. Usually when I hear people talk about risk reward, they're implying that they're taking the trade because they think there's at least a 50% winning. They never say that, but that's what they're implying. So whenever they're saying, oh, this trade is a good risk reward setup, well, I mean, that just saying that by itself is nonsense. You have to talk about probability. What they're implying is it has a good risk reward ratio, and it has a pretty good chance of success. In other words, the probability is 50%, you know, sometimes 40%, 50%, 60%. On any trade, 90% of all bars on the chart, on any chart, you could buy or sell, and you have between a 40 and 60% chance of success. When 10% of the bars on the chart are in a strong breakout, up or down, and during those times, you know, the probability is overwhelmingly one direction. If you're in a very strong bull breakout, it's very hard to make money selling. But all the other bars in the chart, if it's a bull channel or a bear channel or a trading range, you could buy or sell at any given instant and have no worse than a 40% chance of making money and no better than a 60% chance of making money.
Nice way to look at it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's the math. And if you think about it, if you look at any bar on a five-minute chart, you know, let's say an E-mini chart, thousands of contracts are being traded. So that means there are thousands of contracts being sold, thousands of contracts being bought. And, you know, it's not like one side is smart and the other side is stupid. Both sides believe they can make money. And that's what I'm saying. You know, during 90% of the bars on the chart, you can make money either buying or selling if you structure the trade correctly. If you use wide stops and scale in, and use sensible wide stops and scale in. And that's why there's so much volume being taking place on every bar and every chart, because the computers are doing just that. They're structuring the trades well. The computers know they have between a 40 and 60% chance of winning, and they trade small enough so that they can use wide stops and scale in, and that greatly increases their probability of being profitable. It's at the price of risk using wide stops, right? But if you structure your trades correctly during 90% of the bars on any chart, you can make money either as a buyer or as a seller.
So what does your typical trading day look like?
Well, I get up about 5 o'clock every morning. And sometimes I lift some weights. I have some weights in my office. You know, for several days a week, I lift weights. And then in between sets of lifting weights, I'm writing a blog. And I write a blog for my websites about what I think the trading day will be like. You know, do I think today will be a trading range day? Do I think we'll go up? Do I think we'll go down? And then I'm looking at charts. So I'm drawing lines. I'm always drawing lines on charts. So I'm always looking for measured moves. I'm looking for trend lines. I'm looking at the 5-minute moving average, the 60-minute moving average plotted on a 5-minute chart. And I'm looking at yesterday's high, other significant prior highs and lows. And, you know, yesterday, was it a trend day? Was it a trading range day? If it was a trend day, was it climactic? So I'm trying to get a sense of, you know, for example, if yesterday was a very trend day, I know that there's a 50% chance that there'll be follow through buying today on the open for the first hour or two. I also know that there's a 75% chance that today will have at least 2 hours of sideways to down trading, and it will start by the end of the second hour. And finally, I know that there's only a 25% chance, if yesterday was a very strong bull trend day, there's only a 25% chance that today is going to be a very strong bull trend day. So I'm looking at yesterday, I'm looking at support and resistance, and drawing lines on the chart, just trying to get a sense of what the market is doing. When I was your age, a lot of times I would start trading at 5 o'clock as soon as I get up, and sometimes I would trade into the evening. And there have been nights when I've traded all night long. Back then, I used to trade currencies instead of Forex. Now I trade Forex. But, you know, now that I'm getting to be an old guy and I don't need the money, I can be more selective and have a more predictable work day.
Cool. Okay, and so in the beginning, what do you think differentiated you from the average mum or dad trader out there? So what traits did you have and what actions did you take?
Well, early on, you know, I applied my, you know, medical school approach to learning. And, you know, I just, you know, read all that stuff and had all these tutors and went all took all these classes, and everyone was pushing indicators. And to me, it was just hiding the underlying truth. And the underlying truth is price, and I can see it on a chart. So for years, I just assumed that I had to have all those indicators. And, you know, 10 years after 10 years of losing, I got rid of all of them. And I just started looking at the bars. And, you know, if you just print out a chart of any market at the end of the day, it's pretty easy to see, oh, it's going up here. If I bought, I would make money. Oh, look, it's now going down. And it's going down pretty strongly. If I sell here, I'll make money. I don't need indicators. I don't need a course. I don't need anybody. You know, a 10-year-old kid can see that. So that became the basis for my trading. You know, just looking at what the bars are doing and try to get a sense of, you know, will the market go up? Will it keep going up? Will it go down? You know, will it keep going down? And if it's all sideways, what's the best way to trade it? In general, if it's sideways, I'm looking to buy below prior lows, buy more lower, and get out quickly, scalp. If it's going sideways, I look to sell above prior highs and sell more higher, and then scalp. So buy low, sell high, scale in, use wide stops, and scalp.
Cool. Okay, that's good advice out there. So if you're a retail trader working a day job, what steps would you take to start earning an income as a trader?
And people ask me that fairly regularly, and everyone's aware that, you know, if your work hours totally overlap the trading day, you cannot be a day trader. But a lot of people, the market opens, especially if you work in the West Coast, the market opens early enough so that you can trade for an hour or two before you have to go to work. And then alternatively, you could trade, you know, if you have, depending on where you are, you know, the Forex markets are active pretty much most of the time. The longest dead zone in the Forex market is right after the New York Stock Exchange closes. But then it picks up again, you know, in the middle of the night, California time, around midnight. So, you know, most traders can find hours during the day when some market is open, and they can find several hours during the day when some market is open. So I would just try to find a block of time and start to trade. If most traders, when they're starting out, don't have a huge account, so, you know, trading the E-mini and, you know, trading some of the European markets, some of the bond markets, they can't do it. But and also stocks, you know, there are minimum account sizes in the United States if you're going to become a day trader. You know, if you're going to be placing a lot of trades, you have to meet certain account minimums. And then the alternative is Forex markets. And Forex markets, I think, are a good starting place for a lot of traders because you can have a small account and you can trade really, really small.
Yeah, and I think that's a valid point. I mean, I did start off with options and quickly moved into Forex after realizing that, you know, there was a lot of money that you had to put at risk initially just to, you know, take even a few trades. And as soon as you started losing it, the emotional thing was quite difficult for someone who's just starting out. So ended up moving to Forex where you can, you know, essentially practice and until you do feel more confident and get control of those emotions. So can you explain to the listeners your preferred trading strategy? So the ins and outs of how it works and why you chose this type of strategy over the others.
Well, you know, I'm always thinking of the market in terms of a cycle, that it's either in a trend or in a trading range. And trend, it could be a very strong trend or breakout, or it could be in a channel. And so, you know, my favorite strategy is just to see what the market is doing. Is it in a strong breakout? I love strong breakouts, right? It's the highest probability time for trading. But like I said, high probability means smaller reward and less risk. By the time you've had a big breakout, there's probably not much left to the move and your stop is far away. And then when the market starts to enter a channel, I start to do limit order trades against the channel once the channel starts to become broad. So, you know, I'm very happy trading in channels as well. And then in a trading range, like I said, I like trading ranges. You know, buy low, sell high, scalp. I use wider stops. I scale in. So for me, it doesn't matter. The market can do one of three things. It can be in a breakout, you know, no pullbacks. It can be in a channel, which is a trend with a lot of pullbacks, or it can be in a trading range, which is just a sideways channel. And I don't have a favorite. You know, I trade all of them, and I'm very comfortable with all of them. The key is recognizing which one is going on right now. And a lot of times the market's in a transition and you can't tell. And anytime I'm confused, that's my radar telling me the market's in a trading range. Even if it doesn't look like a trading range, if I'm confused, it's in a trading range. And I'm looking to buy low, buy more lower. I'm looking to sell high, sell more higher. And I'm looking to get out with a quick profit. The one thing when I'm confused, the one thing I'm confident of is that the market's not going to go very far, right? And if the market's not going to go very far, I'm not going to be swing trading. I'm going to be looking for scalps.
Cool. And so if you had to dive a little deeper, thinking about a price chart, what three things would you recommend a novice trader educate themselves on when reading a chart?
Well, first thing I would learn the market cycle. You know, learn to be able to distinguish a breakout from a trading range. And I would get some sense of strength. So a lot of times the market will be in a channel. So and then it'll go back up. Let's talk about a bull. So a lot of times it'll pull back and then it'll start going up again. It'll pull back and it'll start to go up again. You know, I would pay attention to how deep the pullbacks are. Are they only lasting one or two bars, or are they lasting 10 or 20 bars? In other words, is the market making big swings? If the pullbacks are, when traders start to see pullbacks, they're always trying to fade. They're always looking, let's say a bull channel. Once traders start to see pullbacks, they start imagining tops. But if the pullbacks are only a bar or two or three and they're not very deep, you know, if you look at a higher time frame chart, 15-minute chart, 60-minute chart, that bull channel on the 5-minute chart is in fact a very strong breakout on the 15-minute or 60-minute chart. So if the pullbacks are not deep, if they're only lasting a bar or two or three, and they're not falling down many points, even though you're seeing pullbacks, only trade in the direction of the trend. I think that's a really common cause of losses. People start seeing pullbacks, so they start seeing reversals, and they start taking opposite, you know, they start betting on the opposite direction. One of the natural things that a beginner is always going to focus on is risk, right? You work so hard to save some money so that you can start trading, and the money becomes really precious. And when they look at any trade, all they think about is one variable, risk. And I said that there are three variables, you know, risk, reward. You always hear people talk about risk, reward, and then probability. And I think probability is the most important of the three. But when a trader starts out, they all they think about is risk. I cannot lose this money. You know, it's like death. It's my death. I'll die as a trader. If I blow this account, you know, my trading career is over. My dream is dead. And they focus a lot on risk. And that's a mistake, because when you focus on risk, you're naturally going to be looking for trades that have the smallest risk, which usually means that if the market is going up, you're looking to sell because the stop is just above the high of this bar, right? But you're ignoring probability. And, you know, anytime you're taking a low risk trade, you're taking a low probability trade. So I think one of the mistakes traders do is they tend to look for reversals when the trend is going on. And then in other words, a trend, when it's channeling up, it's going to keep going up. 80% of reversals are going to fail and you're going to lose money. So yes, your risk is small, but if you're losing 80% of the time, you're going to lose money. On the other, let me just flip it over and go to a trading range. A trading range is filled with two-legged moves, two legs up, two legs down. And the second leg is usually extremely strong. People are naturally hopeful. Everyone's hopeful. I mean, it's a survival skill. And I think it was bred into us. You know, if you're a caveman and you didn't find any food today and you just give up hunting, you're going to die. But if you persistently keep looking for food, eventually you'll find food and you'll survive. And the people who are hopeful get selected out, and their genes become a very big part of our population. I think people are naturally hopeful. And because of that, you know, when the market's in a trading range, I think traders are always hopeful that, oh, look how fast it's going up. It's going to be a breakout and we're soon going to get a trend. So they buy a very strong bull bar at the top, betting on that the trend is going, that it's the start of a trend. They sell a very strong bear bar at the bottom, thinking that, wow, this time for sure, we're going to break out and this is going to be a big trend. But if you're buying at the top, your stop is far away, risk is big. If you're selling at the bottom, your stop is way at the top of the range, your risk is big, and your probability is low, right? So here you have a trade with big risk and low probability. So do I want to sell that strong bear bar at the bottom or buy that strong bull bar at the top? No, I'm doing the opposite. If I see a trading range and I see a strong bull bar at the top, I'm selling. You know, if it has if it closes on its high, I'm selling, right? Because, you know, the guy who's buying has a big risk and low probability. So if I'm doing the opposite, I have much less risk and a high probability. So I think that is another problem that traders face. You know, I have what I call the 80% rule, my inertia rule, that 80% of the time, the market's going to continue to do what it's been doing. If it's trending, 80% of reversal attempts are going to fail. So you should not be looking for reversals. And if it's in a trading range, the market has inertia, it's going to continue in the range. 80% of breakout attempts, up or down, will fail. So instead of betting that a breakout will finally succeed, no matter how strong it looks, you have a better chance of making money if you start looking for trades in the opposite direction.
Cool. And just on that, so you talk about probability a lot, and to be fair, it's the first time that anyone's actually mentioned, or actually maybe it's the second time anyone's mentioned on the show, the significance of probability. And so when you were automating your strategies back in the day, was that something you would calculate on a regular basis within each strategy?
Well, you know it. As soon as you do an automated trade and you get a result, you print out the result, you're going to see percent win, percent loss. So, you know, you quickly see probability, but I still think traders don't really pay much attention to it. I think when you're doing those automations, you tend to focus on risk and reward. You know, how much do I win? How much do I lose? But every trade has three variables, not two, not risk reward. It's risk, reward, and probability. And I think understanding probability is crucial to being a trader. Like I said, during 90% of the bars in the chart, you can make money buying or selling. And the probability of making money, if I buy at any instant, right, let's say I pick a reward equal to my risk. So let's say I'm buying Apple and I'm risking $1 to make $1. At any bar on the chart, you know, for 90% of the bars, I have no worse than a 40% chance of making a dollar before losing a dollar, and no better than a 60% chance of making a dollar before losing a dollar. And as a trader, you're trying to structure a trade to make the probability better or make the reward a little bit better. And you know, that's the art of trading. You're trying to work with the three variables to structure a trade that gives you the best trader's equation. You know, I talk about the trader's equation all the time, and it incorporates the three variables. Basically, you want to make sure that, you know, your risk and reward and probability make sense. You know, your probability of winning times your risk has to be significantly greater than your probability of losing times your how much you're risking on the trade. So, okay, I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, cool. All right, so we're going to move on to the next part of the show. So this is a part I like to call the technicals, and I'm going to run through 12 quickfire questions to help you, the listeners out there, understand what it takes to become a successful trader. So are you ready, Al?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so how long did it take you to go from a trading newbie to consistently profitable?
It took me 10 years.
What's your mental approach to trading, and what special techniques do you use to keep those emotions in check?
Well, I think to be a successful trader, you know, I talk about the I don't care position size. I think the single best thing that a trader can do is get to the point where they truly don't care. And so if you're paper trading, you don't care, but you lie to yourself all the time. I used to lie to myself all the time when I paper traded. I'd say, oh, I really wouldn't have taken that trade, so I'm going to cross that one out. Or I should have. I really would have taken this trade and shown it to be a good winner. I put that in. So it's really easy to lie when you're paper trading. But I think it's better to trade real money. For example, Forex is a good way to do it because you cannot lose a lot of money if you trade small, right? So the best thing to do is get to a position size where you truly do not care. Get down to the I do not care size, so that you can remain objective and do everything that you're supposed to do and just practice doing the right thing. Most traders quickly can figure out what they have to do. I got to buy, I got to sell, I got to get out, I got to get in. And it just takes a lot of time practicing doing what you should be doing. And, I would do it with real money so that there is a little bit of pain if you lose and there's a little bit of happiness if you win. So, I would trade the I don't care size, whatever size that is. I would trade it.
And turning off your trade screen is sometimes helpful. And that was some advice that was left by another interviewee on the show. So keeping that away from your view so you can't actually see it, and so you don't know how much you've got at risk. And if you're all you know is if you're up or down. I tried that the other day, and it seemed to work.
Another thing I sometimes tell traders to do: a lot of traders exit too early. I tell them if they structure a pretty good trade and they have it on, let's say on the 5-minute chart, place a bracket order in there, place the logical stop, place the logical profit target, maybe 2 times greater than the risk, and go for a walk and come back in an hour. And, if you structured your trade correctly, I think you'll be surprised to find out that over time, if you do it 10 times, you're going to make money. So that's basically the equivalent thing of what you're saying.
Yeah.
Don't look at it.
Yep, walk away. And I had another guy on the show that literally trades in the morning, that's it, and he walks away. Well, he turns off everything, doesn't have anything on his phone that he can check, literally sort of excludes himself from his computer screen, so he doesn't know until the next day. And so whatever happens, happens. Right, so what's your favorite entry setup?
Well, as I said, I think of the market in terms of the market cycle, breakout channels and trading ranges. And I don't care which part of the cycle it's in, I'm happy and I enjoy trading all of them. On a given day, the breakout may be so exceptional that I'm really excited and happy about it. Other days, the trading ranges might be so predictable that I can make an incredible amount of money by just buying below prior lows, selling above prior highs. And then other times the channels are really broad. Let's say it's a bull channel. I can sell every new high, scale in higher and do really well. Or buy 50% pullbacks of the prior leg and do really well. So for me, I don't have a favorite. I trade whatever's in front of me, and I never worry about what is not in front of me, and I'm comfortable trading whatever the market is doing.
What strategies do you use to exit and manage active trades?
I usually enter limit orders, and based on the trader's equation, I know what the minimum reward I have to make on a given trade. Take the risk that I'm taking. Going into a trade, I know what my risk is. The first thing I think about on any trade is, where do I have to put my stop? All right. And a lot of beginners put stops that are way too close. All right. And that's a really costly mistake. I try to be objective. I look at the chart and I know where my stop has to be. And once I know where my stop has to be, that's my initial risk. I know where my initial profit target has to be, given that my probability of making money is between 40 and 60%. In general, I want my reward to be at least 2 times my initial risk. Once the trade starts going my way, I ignore initial risk and I look at my actual risk. How many ticks did I actually have to risk to stay in the trade at this point? And then I try to take a reward equal to 2 times that actual risk. If the probability of making profit is really, really high, if I'm trading during a strong breakout, I'm not going to get 2 times a reward equal to 2 times risk. Usually, if I have a high probability trade, I have to take a lower risk reward, which means I usually have to exit with a reward equal to risk instead of 2 times risk. Remember, if you're taking a high probability trade, you have to give something up, and that something is always risk reward. So if you have a very high probability trade, you have to go for a relatively smaller reward relative to your risk.
Cool. And what's your recommended must-read trading book?
Well, I've written many. I've written four books. That three-volume set that I wrote several years ago it's a pretty good summary of how I view the market. And then beyond that, in terms of a fun book, you know, that fictional book about the Jesse Livermore book.
Oh, yeah. It's been mentioned on the show before many times. Secrets of a Stock
Market. Stock Trade or something like that.
Yeah.
That was a fun book. And then beyond that, you know, every book has something. And I don't think there's any one book that's so much better than all the others.
Okay. If there was one thing you would recommend any retail trader spend the next month mastering, what would it be, why, and how could they go about mastering it?
First thing I would say is figuring out where stops have to be. You know, look at any chart, and if I buy, if I sell right here, where do I have to put my stop? And once you know where your stop is, then you know what your position size has to be, because you never want to risk more on a trade than you typically are comfortable risking. So the first thing, I would just look at any chart. Okay, I'm buying here. Wow, this stop has to be far away if I buy here. Well, that's the stop you have to use. And you have to trade small enough so that you're risking no more than you do on any other trade. But that would be the first thing I would do, is trying to get some sense of where I have to put my stop. Where is the sensible stop?
I really like that. That's a really good bit of advice. What trading-related internet resource like Bloomberg.com do you always use?
Zero, nothing. Okay. Because, in terms of fundamentals, there was a show on in the United States, I forget what it was called, Money in Motion or something, a few years ago, about Forex trading. And the guy or the gal would say, I'm going to buy the dollar yen or because Japan is doing such and such and the United States is doing such and such. And also, it's at a 50% retracement. And I say, wait a minute. You're not buying because of that stupid thing you just said about fundamentals. You're buying because it's at a 50% retracement. Every piece of fundamental information is already baked into price. Every institution knows the fundamentals far better than I can ever know any fundamental. So, someone saying, I'm going to sell Brexit because, I'm going to sell the British pound because of Brexit, that's nonsense. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to look to sell pullbacks maybe, but I'm not simply just going to sell because of Brexit, right? I don't care about fundamentals. I don't care at all. They're totally baked into the market. All the institutions know them much better than I could ever know them. I don't care. If the institutions as a group think that the market is going down, then I'm going to look to sell. If more dollars think that the market's going to go up, the market's going to go up, and I'll see that, and I'm going to buy. So I don't care what the fundamentals are. You know, all the time, you'll see stocks with bad earnings reports and they go up, or stocks with good earnings reports and they go down, or some fundamental thing that looks terrible. Japan's economy might be bad, but the yen starts going up. So I don't care what the fundamentals are. I'm in this to make money, right? I'm in this to make money. And, if the chart in front of me, if the price is going up, I want to buy. If the chart in front of me is going down, I'm going to sell. I don't care why. I don't care if it's due to some kid in Brazil eating an ice cream cone. I don't care. I just care about, can I make money?
Yeah.
And knowing the fundamentals has nothing to do with me making money.
What's the biggest mistake most retail traders make?
I think the biggest one is focusing on risk. All they think about is, oh, I worked so hard to get this money. If I lose this account, my wife will kill me or my husband will kill me, and I'll never be allowed to trade again. And so they focus on risk. I think that's the single biggest mistake. They end up using stops that are too tight. They end up taking trades that have really low probability.
What's your preferred broker and trading platform?
I can tell you that I use Interactive Brokers a lot. I use TradeStation a lot, but I'm really not up to date. I'm not qualified to to say what is the best program out there. I think both of them, TradeStation in particular, has a lot of legacy issues. They have very old software that they keep trying to fix, and instead they should just throw out the entire thing and rewrite it for Windows 10. But I understand the economic reasons why they do not. It's good enough. But I'm sure there are a lot of others that are equally good.
And if you could leave our listeners with one piece of advice, what would it be?
Trust yourself. Learn to ignore everybody, all the experts on television, and just trust yourself. Develop the ability to get confident about what you're reading on the chart. And also realize that no matter how confident you are, 40% of the time you're going to be wrong. So be always entirely open to the exact opposite of whatever you believe, and do not be surprised when it happens, because it's going to happen at least 40% of the time.
Okay, we'd like you, so this is the last question, we'd like you to give us the bones of a full trading strategy, so the entry setup, stop loss, take profit targets, market time frame, something our listeners can try out at home. What have you got for us there, Al?
Okay, I'm going to give you one, which is probably the easiest to visualize as I'm speaking. So let's say the Forex market, the euro versus the dollar, is totally flat. And then it breaks out and rallies 100 pips over the course of the next 30 minutes. Right? What do I think is going to follow? Do I think it's going to reverse, or do I think it's going to go up? Probably at least a 60% chance that it's going to go up for 100 pips at some point later in the day. So I'm going to buy for any reason. I'll buy at the market. Right, I'll buy below the low of the prior bar. I'll buy above the high of the prior bar. I'm going to buy for some reason. But my stop is going to be 100 pips away. It's going to be below the low of that bar. And I'm only going to buy that 100 pip breakout if it's well above the highs of the past day or two or three. I want to make sure that it's truly broken out of everything. So we have 100 pip breakout, I buy. My stop is 100 pips away. And it's a high probability trade. So I need to get a reward equal to at least one time my risk. So I'm going to initially plan to take profit of 100 pips. Let's say we have a 20 pip pullback, and then the market starts to go up strongly again. Well, at that point, my actual risk turned out to be only 20 pips. So mathematically, I could exit with a 20 pip profit. However, because of the size of the breakout, I'm pretty confident that I have a reasonable chance at making 100 pips. Mathematically, I can get out at 100 pips at 20 pips if my actual risk turned out to be only 20 pips. It's a high probability trade. So exiting with a reward equal to risk makes sense. But pips, I'll try to sit patiently and get 100 pips. Let me just say one thing about that. I had a friend years ago. I used to trade with him online for several years. And he would take a trade like that. And he would place his stop in 100 pips below. He'd place his limit order in 100 pips above, and then he'd go take his mother out to the doctor's office for a couple hours, 2 or 3 hours. Or he'd go out on the lake and canoe for a couple of hours, and then he'd come back. And part of it was he had things to do, and part of it was he wanted to make sure that he didn't interfere with what he knew was a logical thing to do when he put the trade on.
Cool. And just on that, So say it retraced 20 pips. Is that you'd say you'd enter there, or even, and then you'd sort of enter at the end of the retracement, or are you saying you'd enter at the 100 pip mark regardless?
Well, let's say the market is racing up. Usually, I'm buying at the market, right? But let's say I just turn on the screen, or happen to look at the chart, and it's up 100 pips, and I decide to buy right there. And the instant I buy, it starts to sell off, and 15, 20, 30 minutes later, it's down 20 pips, right?
Yeah.
And I've already bought, so right now I have an open loss of 20 pips. My stop is still down there at 100 pips. However, if the market starts to go up and it goes above my entry and it goes up 20 pips more, right, mathematically at that moment I can exit. And if I take that trade 100 times and manage it that way, I will make money. Because I have a reward equal to my risk, and my probability is 60% or higher. Nice. Mathematically, that is a sound way to trade. So you can exit with a reward equal to your risk as long as the probability is 60% or higher. And if you're buying the market during a very strong breakout, the probability is 60% or more that if you go for any risk and any reward, if the risk and reward are equal, you'll make money. So it doesn't matter if you're going for a 10 pip profit, you risking 10 pips. It doesn't matter if you're going for a 50 pip profit, risking 50 pips. You still have a 60% chance of making your profit target before your stop is hit. So mathematically, if you manage it that way every time, go for a reward equal to your actual risk, it's a profitable strategy.
Makes perfect sense. Thanks, Al. Right, before we wrap up, what's the best way for traders to get hold of you?
Through one of my websites, like brookstradingcourse.com or brooksprice action.com. Usually I get so many emails now that, you know, I have people handle most of the emails. But, you know, if you're signed up for one or the other site, you know, you're able to post questions and I try to answer the questions online. Because a lot of times people ask a question. What was happening with the emails is someone would ask a question, 2 days later someone would ask the same question, 2 days later someone would ask the same question. And, you know, it made more sense just to have people post the questions on the website and then I answer the question on the website so that everyone can see it.
A big thank you to Al for sharing with us today. Everything we've discussed here, along with all the links, are in the show notes. To find them, simply search for Al in the search box on 52traders.com. Until next time, I wish all my listeners trading happiness and success.